ball is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to another episode of Nosebleeds and all-star veteran crew on this week's episode. Nick Guzman alongside Jack Warner and Nick Palmer. Recording this on Thursday afternoon, the day after the Mets completed a sweep of the Subway Series over the Yankees by a score of 12-2. Myself and Jack were there Wednesday. Nick, you were there Tuesday, but Subway Series, always a fun time in New York, but not so much for Yankee fans right now. But first off, Jack, how you doing?
I mean, after last night, my view of baseball in New York is like very much changed. I know both teams are kind of having uncharacteristically different, you know, runs right now. Obviously, I don't think the Mets will play consistently as good as they're playing right now for the rest of the season, the same way that I don't think the Yankees will play as consistently bad as they're playing right now for the rest of the season. But these past two games were far more of a beatdown to the Yankees that I could have ever anticipated, especially, you know, in the weeks leading up to it. One of the things that, you know, several people that I've talked about the series with, especially working at SNY and, you know, us having to do a lot of prep, you know, in business and media stuff for the Subway Series, is it feels like these two teams always sweep. I mean, or not sweep, always split. And it was just, I don't think I could have been prepared for how lopsided these past two games were. But it was an absolutely amazing experience Wednesday night, or last night, I should say, to get to see, you know, the ballpark for the Subway Series. I thought the crowd was great. I thought being there with Nick and Lou was great. And seeing the crew of three the night before with Nick, Evan, and Will was also really, really fun. So I'm just happy to kind of look back on the past couple of days and talk about this Subway Series Moose Wash.
I'm dejected, pretty sour mood. The Yankees suck, dude. There's a lot of problems with this team, and we'll get into all of them because I don't even think we can get into all of them. We only have like an hour and a half, and you could spend a whole day talking about this. But I mean, the Mets are hitting the absolute bejesus out of the ball, so I'm not going to take that away from them. Their pieces are their players who do in fact play baseball are hitting the ball very well right now, and everything seems to be going right for them, and everything's going wrong for the Yankees. But that is why, to quote Aaron Boone, that's why you play 162 games.
Yeah, and for the Mets, really, it's been like a tale of, feels like a season that's been split into like five or six different seasons that have gone in drastically different directions. You think about how bad they were at the start of the season, and then they heated up at the end of April, early May. And then at the end of May, it was like, blow this team up. There's the Jorge Lopez incident, all those other things happening. And now all of a sudden, they're probably the hottest team in baseball. And like you were saying, Jack, you kind of assume that these Subway Series are going to be splits just because that's kind of the way that they always turn out. But the Mets really put the hammer down offensively in these two games against the Yankees, scoring 9 runs on Tuesday and then 12 runs on Wednesday. And in the game Tuesday, the Yankees were able to get closer. They got that Aaron Judge grand slam in the 8th inning, but then Reed Garrett was able to shut the door in the 8th and the 9th. But that was Garrett Cole starting that game for the Yankees, and he did not look anywhere near like his normal self. His fastball, the velocity was down. This is just his second start since coming back from that elbow injury, but the velocity was down on that fastball, and Mets hitters, whether it was Vientos, whether it was Bader, were teeing off on Garrett Cole's fastball. So I want to touch on Cole first, and if there's cause for concern regarding him, and also just what you guys saw out of that start, that really, it was almost like batting practice for these Mets hitters.
It was weird. for Gerrit Cole, not just because the fastball velo was down. I mean, he said it, he made some like weird like car reference after the game. He's like, it's kind of like driving a car, like too much clutch or too little clutch can slip you out of the gear a little bit.
For like, Pete's sake.
Yeah, exactly. He sounds like Kermit. That's, but anyway.
He says for Pete's sake, which is really funny.
For Pete's, I love when he says for Pete. He's literally like he's a perfect human being, except for two nights ago when he wasn't very good. It wasn't just that the fastball velo was down, though. He was missing the strike zone, and not just a little bit. He was a couple inches outside of the zone a lot. He walked a lot of batters. Wasn't locating that well. And look, it is kind of like his spring training. So I'm not going to be one of those people that's going to say Gerrit Cole is going to have a bad year because he had one bad outing against the Mets. I don't see that as a logical line of thinking. Also, he has the worst ERA against the Mets of any team in the MLB career-wise. And that it is, I think that that's a sham stat. I don't think it really has anything to do with anything, but just interesting. He'll be fine. Anyone who says he's not going to be fine is predicting that far too early.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I think I would be more concerned from him. I know Nick kind of brought it up. I think I would be more concerned for him if I didn't see the post-game interview that he had after that game, where I feel like he handled it very, very well. And he was very honest with himself and was very honest in his assessment, which, I mean, it's hard not to be. Obviously, it was a very tough outing for him. But I think location was a big thing, the way that Nick mentioned. But the other thing is that couple miles an hour off that fastball really does change things, because one of the things that all baseball fans know is that one of the dirtiest pitches that Gerrit Cole throws is not even anything with some stupid movement and, you know, hula hoops in it. It's when he throws that heater in the top of the zone and makes guys swing out of their shoes at it and look stupid. So obviously those couple miles an hour that are not on his fastball or on his heater right now is going to cost him, because hitters are going to want to take advantage of that. Because again, when his heater is at its best, that's a pitch that no one wants to face. And I think another reason why this was a tougher outing for him, and I'm not blaming it all on this, because again, performance-wise, he didn't look great. But he also faced a lineup of hitters that I think do have some exposure to him. He's faced the Mets before, and then even some of the newer Mets. Bader was a former teammate. J.D. Martinez used to go toe-to-toe with him as a member of the Red Sox all the time, and it's usually hit particularly well against the Yankees. So I think that was also – you do have to give some credit to the Mets lineup, who just absolutely raked. But I again, this is his second time out this season, and he's coming off of an injury. He's coming off a Cy Young season as well. He's a fantastic pitcher. I just think this is one of those. I also think Gerrit Cole is in a unique class of pitchers where, you know, Nick kind of had an interesting thing where he said, you know, you can't say this is a bad season yet. I think Gerrit Cole is in an elite class of pitchers where I don't think he's going to allow himself to have a bad season. If there's anyone I trust to turn things around and really lock in on what's not clicking and be able to fix it going forward, it's Gerrit Cole. So it was definitely eye-opening to see a start go that haywire for him. But again, I think there's multiple things to take away from it, and I don't think you're anywhere near the mode yet to say that this is going to be a rough remainder of the season for Gerrit Cole.
And I think you do have to give some credit to this Mets lineup, because they're just about as hot as any team in baseball right now. And the Tuesday game was really the Mark Vientos show. Two home runs for him, one a towering moonshot to left field, the other one an impressive line drive to right center that just got over the fence, hit off the top of the wall, and then made it over. But I think a big catalyst for the reason why these Mets have been so effective recently has been the play of Mark Vientos at third base and just applying that power bat offensively. Defensively, yes, there's still a lot to be desired when it comes to Vientos. He's makes errors pretty frequently and just doesn't look all that comfortable playing defense at third base. But when you consider the spark that his bat has given to this lineup ever since they've sent down Brett Beatty and given Vientos the reins at third base, I think that's as big of a reason as any that these Mets have been so successful, because players like him in the bottom of this Mets lineup have been so effective.
I'm glad you brought up errors. And we'll get into this in a second. Gleyber Torres on the other side of the ball.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. This guy needs to be put on a rocket ship and sent somewhere else. Perhaps, like, I don't know, another team, maybe another league, maybe another planet. Here's the issue with Gleyber Torres. Yeah, his groin has been bothering him a little bit. Whatever. It has been a nonstop show of plays he should make where he doesn't. That ground ball with runners on third and second in the first game of the series was absolutely atrocious. And then he doesn't run out a ground ball that he easily could have bought run out to extend the rally in that inning. And then you look at the fact that they lost only by 2 runs. And you're like, man, if Torres didn't make that error and if he'd run out the ball, we could be talking about a series split here. They bench him the game after. Boone said he might bench him in some following games as well. He's kind of getting the Rizzo treatment right now, which is not a good sign. I mean, he's been doing this all year. In a free agent year, he's not putting in effort. And that says so much kind of about the ball player is. I was never high on Gleyber Torres, and now I'm so, so low on Gleyber Torres just because it seems like he doesn't make an effort. And that sucks to see because when he's hitting well, he's one of the best hitting second basemen in the league. But he's not hitting well, and he's making errors, and he's not trying. It hurts to watch, man. It hurts to watch.
And I think now, you know, you've been seeing him struggle for a decent amount of time now, but seeing the recent decisions of Aaron Boone, obviously, to bench him and even say that there could be some benchings in the games going forward, I think now is where you say, like, it's officially crunch time, because especially in Major League Baseball where you play so many games that even when you start to see a player struggle, it doesn't immediately result in a bench. Usually, even when you know someone's a starter for your team, you usually at least allow them to have the chance to turn things around. Once you get the bench treatment, once you get, like you said, the Rizzo treatment, that's to light a fire under someone's ass. That's a last ditch effort. That's something that this is going to be the last chance that he needs to make Gleyber Torres absolutely see red, because he's getting benched in these upcoming games. And if this doesn't, you know, get through to him, I don't know what will. I think the other thing that doesn't help Glaber's case, and Nick, you kind of alluded to it, Nick Palmer, I just realized I'm with two Nicks. Nick Palmer, you just alluded to it, is that it always feels like, and again, this is just from the sample size of Yankee games that I watch, is that it feels like multiple times that I've seen Gleyber Torres make errors, they've been in crucial points. At least last night when you saw, you know, Mark Vientos make that blunder at third base where he had that ball kind of hop up on him and hit him in the glove and it ended up being a, you know, reached on an error. At least it felt like it was just kind of a point in the game where, yeah, they had to get themselves out of that inning, but it was a game where they had some command in. You think about Tuesday night where you mentioned that ground ball that gets through the infield that lets 2 runs score. You know, you have something like that. I can even think back to the 22 ALCS where, yes, the Astros were going to win that series through and through. But in game 4, the Yankees could have at least forced a gentleman sweep. And it came down to errors from Gleyber and IKF that basically was a turning point in that game. So that's the other thing that I think is tough, is that when you look at some of the defensive blunders that Gleyber Torres has had, it's bad enough to have errors be somewhat as frequent as his, but when they come in big spots where you need your players to step up and make big plays, it just makes it much more harder to make a case for him, especially like there's a light at the end of the tunnel type argument when it's like, okay, when it comes crunch time, can I trust you to make plays?
He's made more errors than hit home runs, by the way.
No,
that's bad.
That's no good. And it seems like almost like a, it's not just like the Yankees lost these two Subway Series games. It's sort of the manner in which they happen. You think about the Torres blunders, also the DJ LeMahieu, that ball that Lindor squibbed the other way, and he stabbed at it almost like it was a foul ball, that like the lack of effort in that play, allowing Lindor to get to second base, didn't really have that big of an impact on the game, but it's just kind of symptomatic of what's been going on with the Yankees recently. And I think when you look at this Yankee lineup right now, you've got essentially Soto, you've got essentially Judge, And besides that, there's not much else working. So,
Stanton's hurt. That was your
Stanton's
that's
hurt.
Your other that's your
Rizzo's
other high
out
point.
Too.
He's hurt.
Volpe's cooled down. Yeah. Verdugo has gotten ice cold. Think about those double plays on Wednesday, two from Verdugo, one for Trevino. It's not like the Yankees didn't have traffic early in that game. They just in crucial spots were hitting into double plays that were in an inning ending. And they had the bases loaded on Tuesday in the first inning, the bases loaded on Wednesday in the first inning, and not being able to cash in anything in those situations really just sets you up to have a terrible Subway Series.
But the other
they
thing
lead the league
kind of,
and hit into double plays, by the way.
And the other thing that's kind of miserable too, watching the Yankees lineup, is like I can at least give a slight benefit of the doubt to Volpe and Verdugo, where yes, they've objectively cooled down, but I'm at least still seeing them find barrels. It's this bottom three, bottom four of the Yankees lineup where it's like once you get there, it feels like there's no chance. Like it's already apparent that majority of the offensive production for the Yankees is coming through the fact that you have the best hitter on the planet right now, along with Juan Soto, who's another one of the best hitters on the planet right now. And then at least Volpe gives you a chance because he's an aggressive hitter and he finds barrels. And even if, you know, I think some of the cool down from Volpe and Verdugo lately, I do think some of it doesn't help that, you know, Verdugo's grounding into two double plays last night. But again, I do think that a little bit of the cool down that you've seen from Volpe and Verdugo, some of it can be chalked up to just some bad luck. Like, I do think they're still finding barrels and hitting balls hard. It's just they're not finding grass. But when once you reach the bottom of this lineup, and I give all the credit in the world to Ben Rice, even he's finding barrels and he's doing his thing. But, you know, he's obviously here to fill a vacancy at first base, you know, for talent and health reasons. But, you know, Trevino has been hard to watch. It's been we mentioned it in the post game report last night, you, me and Lou, you know, Nick Guzman, it just feels like there's gaping holes in the lineup where you reach certain points in the game where you're like, is it even worth going up to bat this inning?
That's a fair point. To your point on Verdugo, I think he performs a lot better when he doesn't have to be the cleanup hitter for the Yankees or the two hitter when Juan Soto's out. When he's like an additional piece behind Judge, Soto, Stanton, I think that's where he thrives. And yeah, but Volpe, I'm not particularly worried about. I think he's hitting the ball well. Going into last night, he was on an 8-game hit streak. So, you know, he's doing his job to a fair degree. DJ LeMahieu is a shell of his former self. This guy's OPS, I think, is under 500, which is so bad. Ben Rice, I was a little bit sad to see that they got JD Davis because that meant that Ben Rice would not be taking on the, you know, an everyday first base role, which I love. Do you know the story of Ben Rice? It is one of the greatest stories in the world. He went to Dartmouth for 1 year and then COVID hit and they weren't playing baseball. So he was like finding any place to play baseball that he could. He was playing in like men's rec leagues and like beer leagues and stuff. And I think a family member of a Yankees scout was playing in the league with him and was like, yo, this guy, Ben Rice, is like the real deal. So the Yankees had eyes on Ben Rice when no other team had eyes on Ben Rice. They shoot him into double A. He rakes. They put him into triple A. He rakes. And then the first time Aaron Boone saw him was in spring training this year, and he impressed everyone. So I am number one Ben Rice stan. Love you, Benny. But to your point, to the bottom of this lineup, Jose Trevino is he goes through hot and cold streaks. He's on a cold streak right now. Austin Wells hasn't shown that he's developed enough. I don't think he's a lefty power bat. He needs to make more consistent hard contact. Trent Grisham, although I love some of his big moments, is not who we need him to be. And Oswaldo Cabrera, despite Oswaldo mania in the first 2 weeks where he was the best hitter in baseball statistically for the first 2 weeks of the season, he's been nothing since. The bottom of this Yankees lineup, 4 through 9, is not fun to watch.
And the part of this Yankees team that really was their anchor in some of the early part of the season was just how good their starting pitching staff was. And even that's cooled off recently. You think about Carlos Rodon has gotten blown up in his last two starts. Luis Gil came into yesterday's game having gotten blown up in his last start, and he gets blown up again. Gerrit Cole comes back from injury and hasn't looked like his normal self. So what I want to ask is, do you think there's any cause for concern for this pitching staff, or do you think it's just kind of a blimp in a 162 game season? Or is there reason to think that possibly this Yankees pitching staff was overperforming to begin the year?
No, this is a blip. I don't see it as anything except for a blip. It's a blip when Nestor Cortez is your best pitcher, because we were talking about in the first, month and a half how Nestor was the worst pitcher with a 3.5 ERA or a 3.2 ERA, which is great for your five starter. I miss Clark Schmidt so much. Clark Schmidt was on an absolute tear before he went down. Hopefully he'll be back soon. Not worried about Gerrit Cole. So those are two guys you can count on. Carlos Rodon figured it out early in the year. I'm convinced that he can keep being consistent. And Stroman's been fine as well. I don't have a problem with Marcus Stroman. So the starting pitching is, I think, the least of the Yankees' worries right now. When everything is going wrong, you can have a couple bad starts in there. But good thing the Orioles lost five in a row, right? Because otherwise we'd be in real trouble. Yankees' lead in the AL East has not diminished at all since they've gone on this losing streak.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, if you think about the hell that has been the last week and a half, 2 weeks for the Yankees, you do also have, I mean, again, they're an elite team that on paper is supposed to be a World Series caliber team. So you do have to be able to perform well against other good teams. But I do think it's important to keep in mind, while I do think you've seen things that are concerning with regards to just overall performance and command and being able to, have good outings from your starting arms. This last week or 2 weeks that has been plaguing the Yankees, it was the Dodgers, who are the Dodgers. It's the Red Sox, who, to their credit, have played the best offensive baseball in the past month that they've played in the entire season. It's been the shut up, Nick Palmer. Shut up. Don't mimic me. I'm not even giving them too much credit. Here, I'll put my head in front of the Red Sox pennant that's on my camera right now, so you don't have to look at it. I'll be nice.
Hey, Duran is pretty good, dude. I like Duran. I think
Duran's an
he's
all-star. If he doesn't, if this, if Jarren Duran is not an all-star this year, it's only feeding the popularity contest narrative because he's done everything and more to be an all-star. That's besides the point. It goes Dodgers. Who are the Dodgers? There's nothing. What is there to be said that you can't say already about the
I
Dodgers?
love them.
Yes, you do. The Red Sox, like I said, are hitting the best that they've hit all season, and then the Braves, who are another team that can hit, and then the Mets, who we are joyfully watching how good they've been able to hit as of recently. So it is another thing to kind of keep in mind that don't scoff at me, Nick Palmer. You're making
You said
fake jokes.
joyfully. I'm not joyful.
Well, you don't cover the team. It's a very nice change of pace for Mr. Guzman and I and Evan Harkin to watch this team hit now, because it's actually given us a reason to go to the
Fun.
ballpark.
I get excited to go.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I have so much more pep in my step when I head to the seven train. But no, again, you are seeing things that objectively are not good performance-wise from this Yankees pitching staff with regard to command and all sorts of things that go into being a good major league pitcher. But it is also important to keep in mind, and it does kind of feed into the idea that Nick had of this being a blunt Nick Palmer, that this had, it's funny to add
Just
the,
assign us numbers.
yeah.
Assign us numbers.
We should just
All
start
right.
calling you Nick too,
All
Jack.
right. Guzman is, I'll do Guzman is thing one, Palmer's thing two.
That works.
But the point that thing two made about the fact that this is, if he thinks that this is a blimp, it does kind of tie into that like they've been playing some of the best lineups in the major leagues right now at this point in the season for about the last week and a half, 2 weeks.
162.
Yeah, it is a long, long season, and there is plenty of time for the Yankees to figure it out. But I think the last thing I want to touch on specifically about the Yankees is, and it's kind of incredible that we haven't. It's been very negative so far. The absolute unreal season that Aaron Judge is having and
Oh my
continues to
God.
have, despite being terrible for the first few weeks of the season, to be, he's beyond his 2022 record-setting pace right now, which is unbelievable to think of. But I think the other reason why you can still have hope as a Yankees fan, despite this very negative stretch, is that if you figure it out even a little bit around Aaron Judge in this lineup, I mean, you're probably pretty golden just considering the insane season he's putting up again.
I love Aaron Judge, and I'll tell you why I love Aaron Judge. First of all, it's more impressive than 2022 because he gave everyone a head start in April. He was batting under 200 near the end of April, with like I think four home runs, and then he's just been on an absolute tear. So he gave him a head start. He was absolutely dog water in April. But he's so good. He's such a leader. The guy hits home runs like it's nobody's business. Bader kind of freaked him out last night. Did you see on that home run where Bader was backpedaling for the home run? And Judge was like, dang, Bader kind of juked me out on that one. So that was funny. Judge this series, seven of the nine Yankee RBIs, only did not get on base once in all of his at bats. I think it was something like an 850 OBP, which is pretty good. Judge good. Judge good.
Yeah, last night he became the fourth player in the history of Major League Baseball to have 30 home runs before the All-Star break on three different occasions.
It's pretty good.
He joins Mark McGwire, who did it four times, Griffey, and Ruth, which is pretty insane names to be in with. But no, I just would like to take a second to do one of the things that I do best, which is laugh at Yankees fans. I understand that the month of April was very ugly, but I would just like to let the record show that Aaron Judge was booed at Yankee Stadium during the month of April. And I just hope that Yankee fans can sit and bask in that and know that they don't deserve this. At least the fans that were there, they don't deserve that precious king, their precious king, who is an unbelievable hitter who continues to strike fear into every pitcher and was the only thing that was the slightest bit of a morsel of a thing to smile about during the Subway Series was Aaron Judge. And I have no reason to think that he will slow down anytime soon. And the fact that he is on, he is one, which I say this like it's, an easy task. It's not, but I, if it, it's, I think I'm convinced Aaron Judge can do just about anything. He's one multi-home run game away from going back on pace to hitting 62 home runs again. I think he's on pace for 59 right now. All he needs is another one or two multi-homer games to be right back on pace to rewrite history again. So you're just a clownery fan base.
So in defense of the Yankee fan base, I've always said this, by the way. I've always said this. Because the Yankees have so many fans, it is undoubtedly the biggest fan base in baseball. There are going to be more casuals. There are going to be more clowns than any other fan base. I am not denying that the Yankees fan base, not by percentage, yeah, by percentage, has more clowns than any other fan base and people who have no idea what they're talking about. So the people who think that because they live in New York City that they are a Yankee fan, and then they go up there and boo Aaron Judge. Bozos, Jack Warner, stop.
Wait, I got another one. I got another one.
Anyone who's booing Aaron Judge,
Stop.
doesn't know anything about baseball. Doesn't know anything about Aaron Judge, and they're dumb. They're stupid and dumb and big dummy poo-poo heads. So yes, Jack, booing Aaron Judge was a bad idea.
And it's not even like he turned it around like a little bit. Like the season he's having right now is so ridiculously good. It's
He's the
almost,
best hitter in
what if he
baseball.
had like a normal April? What would his numbers look like?
Right?
Like not even a good
Right?
April, just like an average April. It'd be,
He would be probably 5, 6 home runs ahead of pace.
yeah. And he's the one, him and Soto are the bright spots right now in this Yankee lineup. But it's another big divisional series coming up for them against the Blue Jays. They're still in first place in the American League East, thanks in part to the Baltimore Orioles falling off a cliff a little bit. But still just one game in that American League East. I think that's a race that's going to come down to the very end of this season. And it is 162 games. That's a lot, but I think it's time to Stop.
162 games is a lot, which means there's a chance for the third team in the American League East to climb back into things.
The Tampa Bay Rays?
The Tampa Bay.
The
Wait, the Blue Jays are gonna get it together? Oh, the Boston Red Sox. You're right.
Let's not be outlandish. Don't let
Maybe.
the boys get hot. Just don't let the boys get hot.
Oh, don't worry, they won't.
They still got quite the climb ahead of them. What is it? It's
Yes, they do.
is
Yes,
it
they do.
eight games, right? Eight, nine, seven, eight, something like that.
It's around there. Yeah.
Yeah. So they got quite the climb, but
They
you
do.
never know. If the Yankees and Orioles continue to slide and the Red Sox stay hot, they
Can the
might.
Yankees just keep playing the Mets so that the Red Sox can get back into this?
I'm down. Based
You
on the
got
way things are
your
going.
hand raised, Nick Palmer. What's up?
Can we talk about JD Martinez and how glorious he is at hitting?
We can.
He's,
I was just going to
yeah.
transition into giving the Mets their flowers. And there are a lot of people who deserve them, but I think starting with JD Martinez. And something I brought up on one-on-one Saturday was if can you imagine this Mets team without a real DH? Like without think about I'm thinking about 2022 when it was a Dom Smith, JD Davis platoon in the first half of the season, then Darren Ruff, Daniel Vogelbach put platoon at DH in the second half, which was like fine, but having a professional hitter in the three hole, someone who's done it year after year after year, and is still so good. It's done so much for this Mets lineup. And when they were without him in the beginning of the season, you could really see that. And now that he's here, and it just provides so much stability in that to have a 280, 290 hitter with a over 800 OPS, he's going to hit for power. He's going to go the other way. He's going to take smart at bats. It just provides this level of comfort in the middle of this Mets lineup that you know. Even when other hitters are going to be streaky, you know, people like Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, guys who can get hot and be the best hitters in baseball and then get really, really cold. Having JD Martinez be steady Eddie in that three hole is just so, so special for these Mets.
Oh, yes, I love JD Martinez. And he's so good because, okay, he is not fast. That's the only thing that's not good about him. He's really slow on the base paths, but that is because of age and because of his weight. You're welcome. The Dodgers fixed him. Because if you remember Jack Warner, he was not looking at the same value that he was towards the end of his Red Sox tenure.
That is
He was
true.
nowhere near where he was on the Dodgers and now on the Mets this year. And so maybe he just needed to get out of Boston like everyone does. But JD Martinez, what makes him so great is every time he hits the ball, it seems like he barrels it. I mean, he 98% barrel 98th percentile on barrel rate. That's absolutely disgusting. 98th percentile on expected slugging, 97th on xWOBA. This guy is a pure unfiltered hitter, and I think Pete Alonso talks about that a lot, just how nice it is to see. He called him a hitting savant, which I think is the right term for JD Martinez. Yeah, he strikes out a lot, but he hits the ball a lot. He hits the ball hard a lot more than he strikes out, and that's all you can ask for.
And the other thing is, I think the association that's commonly made with JD Martinez, or at least earlier in his career, maybe when he was a little bit younger, was being a power bat. He's a home run hitter. He even now when he's on the older half of his career, he hit 30 home runs for the Dodgers last year. Like, this is a guy that still has the ability to hit balls that leave the yard. But one of the things that I think is also just so valuable about him is he is so much more, it's so clear in the way that he hits, that he is so much more focused on good swings than he is leaving the yard. And he's more focused on finding barrels than he is than leaving the yard, and focused on, going the other way than he is leaving the yard. Because I'll tell you, when it's not homers, which he's done plenty of in his career, and even so for the Mets this year, he's spraying gaps, he's putting balls down the line, he's gutting out RBI singles, and even last night, his was kind of a it was kind of an end capper that he just popped into right field. This guy just worries about finding grass. That's all he worries about, is just having good swings and finding, being able to send the ball somewhere to bring runners across. And I think I really do think that, and again, I'm not inside the Mets clubhouse, I'm not on the team, I can't speak for it, but I would be willing to wager that that sort of security that he's provided at the three spot or the four spot, wherever he's hitting in that game, because it juggles every couple games. And the fact that they have such a stable DH that they're able to put their faith in, I do think that's provided incentive for guys in the top two in the lineup and top three in the lineup, for Lindor and Nimmo, to be more consistent and have more of an approach at the plate and know that they don't need to be a hero in their first at bat, that they don't need to do more than just getting on base in those, you know, in their first couple at bats of the game, because they know what's coming up behind them. They know they have somebody that can advance runners, that can find gaps, that can hit spray balls down the line, or when he gets the right pitch, he hits one that leaves the yard. So he's been one of the most fun hitters to watch for a very long time. He's been a personal favorite of mine. I've read article after article and have heard from people about how scientific he is about hitting. He really does put so much work into his craft as a hitter. It's a science to him. And fun fact, he's actually one of the first big leaguers I ever met when I was in fifth grade, and he played in Detroit. He came to my travel baseball team. He came to our training facility and he like met our whole team. He's just an absolute joy in the clubhouse. Even when I'm not seeing him in interviews, I'm always seeing him in conversations full of laughter with his teammates. I still maintain what I said on that one-on-one episode that Mr. Guzman here, you know, referred to a few minutes ago, which was, I said that this could be, and as long as it continues at this rate, will be one of the best, if not the best acquisition that the Mets have made in the past 2 to 3 seasons.
And to speak to your point, about spraying the ball the other way, he does not have ridiculous bat speed, which makes his power even more impressive. I think he's just around the middle point of the league in bat speed, which is insane for someone who slugs the ball like JD Martinez does. And that also just proves that, yeah, hitting is a science, and he is he's certainly the Albert Einstein of hitting.
He's got a PhD.
He's got a PhD. He the doctor is in.
And if having him third in that lineup has provided, you know, a sense of stability for the Mets throughout this season, what's provided a spark is getting Francisco Alvarez back.
Oh, my God.
Getting him back to hitting absolute nukes. Because when he first came back, he was hitting some singles, just kind of getting his swing together. And now he's back to his power hitting self. He hit a home run yesterday. He's hitting now .313. On the season, 904 OPS. He was 3 for 3 yesterday. He had an RBI double too. And it's impressive power. I mean, that home run was a pitch that was up and away, and he took it to right center field, the opposite field, and cleared the fence.
It was up and away, and it was 98 miles an hour up and away. And he managed to hit a home run going the other way on it, which I think is absolutely unreal. And currently leads all active catchers in OPS. On top of that, the Mets are, I believe, they've won 22 of the last 25 games that he's played in. So yeah, at this point, if anyone is continuing to deny the importance that he has just being present in the lineup for this Mets team, I don't know what else there is to show you. He's one of the most fundamentally sound hitters. He works good at bats very often too. He can work into counts, especially if he gets behind early. If he's 0-1, 0-2, 1-2, you see him work a lot of at bats where a lot of his bats aren't concluding until the count is at least 2-2, 3-2. And that's another just valuable trait to have as well. When you can wear pitchers down, where even if they get you out, it's a difficult out for them to have to get. He's just been so impressive ever since he came onto the scene, but especially this season, he's kind of proving that, you know, that hot start that he had when he, you know, came up to the bigs last season is not a fluke.
And that's what's been so impressive, is that last season he was a guy who was pretty much swinging for the fences almost every time he was up there. And yep, yes, it concluded with him hitting a bunch of very impressive home runs, but he seems like such a more of a complete hitter this year. You think about, I think of that at bat down in Texas where he was down 0-2 in the eighth inning, worked it back to 3-2, and then broke to double in the gap off David Robertson. That's the kind of a bat where last season, Robertson would have thrown him a cutter away or a cutter inside, and he would have struck out. And it wouldn't have been a strike, but he would have fished, would have gotten over anxious, and it would have been an ugly at bat. But the fact that he's able to work, you know, these counts full and get back into at bats, even when he's behind, it just seems like he's really taken a step forward in his development as a hitter. That doesn't even begin to touch on the impact that he has on his pitching staff. But I think getting him back has been such an incredibly huge spark for these Mets. And also,
he's good.
He's good. He's good, Nick. And we touched a little bit on Mark Vientos, who has also provided a big spark. But I think another big reason why the Mets swept the Subway Series and just have been playing so well in general is that guys who were not hitting earlier in the year, but we always knew could hit, have finally started to hit again. And that's Francisco Lindor, that's Brandon Nimmo, and guys who were really, really struggling for a good portion of the season. You know, you move Lindor to leadoff, you move Nimmo to second, and it seems like that shouldn't have as much of an impact as it did, just switching the order around a little bit, but it really has. And you think about even some of the smaller moves that have been made. Jose Iglesias now facing left-handers as the second baseman, considering just how poor Jeff McNeil has been and continues to be this season. And then someone like Luis Torrens, the catcher, you know, coming in as a backup now to Francisco Alvarez. The Mets move on from Omar Narvaez and Tomas Nito. It just seemed like there's a real lack of dead weight in this lineup right now. And 1 through 9, even Harrison Bader hitting 2 home runs against his former team, because why not? You know, I had a tweet.
How did that one feel, Nick Palmer? How did that one feel?
I like Harrison Bader. It hurt less than all the other ones.
He's been so good. It's almost like having a double leadoff situation, you know,
you're calling Harrison Bader a leadoff hitter?
No, how he's hit this season.
Dude, how he's hitting this season. I was saying this earlier in the season that once you get, and it was more, to me, it stood out more when the lineup wasn't hitting as good 1 through 9, and you were able to see if there was, because this progression of the Mets lineup has been somewhat slow. It was first you had, you know, no one really lighting the world on fire, more so the back half of the lineup showing up than the top half of the lineup really showing up. Then once you started to see the front half, the 1 through 4 hitters, Lindor, Nimmo, Alonso, Martinez, really start to power this lineup over the last probably month or so, month and a half or so, then the story was more on them. It was, look at all the production that you're getting from the top half of this Mets lineup. It's once the one person who continued to click throughout all of this was Harrison Bader, hitting him in the 9 spot, whether he's able to work walks or whether he's able
he
to
doesn't play. Walk though he doesn't
but he has
walk.
This he's worked some this season.
He's in the 16th percentile of walks. He doesn't walk.
I understand. I'm talking about just having a good hitter in the 9 spot who is as athletic as somebody that is usually hitting in the 1 or 2 spot. He's somebody that absolutely can serve as a double leadoff hitter, and I think is kind of doing that already.
I think that's the only spot I disagree, is calling him a double leadoff hitter, because he chases a lot of balls. He ends up swinging outside of the zone a lot. He doesn't walk a lot. The exit velo on a lot of his hits aren't fantastic, but I guess that could be an attribute of a leadoff hitter. I don't know. I've watched him for too many years now to where he'll get hot for maybe a week and a half, and then great fielder. Love him in center field. I think he's a fantastic, fantastic center fielder. I don't see him as a consistent part of any lineup in the MLB, and that's unfortunate because I watched him in the ALDS against Cleveland absolutely rake against them, and I was like, oh, man. Harrison Bader might be back, and then he just never is. And that's why he bounces from team to team. It's just because he can't find a consistent bat. And that's why he bats 9th, unfortunately, for the Mets.
I'm just saying, he has a higher batting average than 3 of the 4 hitters 1 through 4 in the Mets lineup. He has a higher batting average than, I think it's, than Lindor, Nimmo, and Alonso. And it's ranging from anywhere from, call it, 30 to 50 points on all of them.
But does he get on base?
Regardless of whether or not he's a double leadoff hitter, I think with Starling Marte now on the injured list, you know, Bader and someone like Tyrone Taylor are going to have to produce offensively more so than you needed them to do previously. If having Bader hit 270 was a luxury before, now it's a little bit more of a necessity. So like you're saying, Nick, with that inconsistency, it is very possible that, you know, in the coming weeks that he goes ice cold and it becomes a little more noticeable just because of the lack of Marte in the lineup.
And that's why I wasn't concerned about Lindor at all, because we know the kind of hitter he is. We know that he can be a consistent hitter. And
is the missing attribute then, if we're zeroing in on the double leadoff conversation,
sure.
Are you saying that the missing attribute then is his ability to draw walks?
It's his ability to draw walks and the fact that he chases pitches outside of the zone. If he was, to be an effective nine hitter, you've got to work counts, and he does not work counts.
Right. I'm just, no, and I agree with you on that. I'm just saying he's hitting statistically at a more consistent clip, besides maybe Francisco Lindor. He's hitting at a more consistent clip than, call it, two or three of the top four Mets hitters right now. So when when you get to the bottom of the order, because I think double leadoff is a funny term, because it's like if you were actually a leadoff hitter, wouldn't you just be hitting leadoff? I understand what you're like. I wouldn't bat Harrison Bader one in the Mets lineup. Absolutely not. But I just think people look at the bottom half of the order as the weak in any baseball team. You don't put your strongest hitters in the bottom four to bottom three of your batting order. Right. And I think when you look amongst those hitters, the one who has shown the consistency of somebody who, or the flashes of the consistency of someone that you do put in the top three or top four spots of your lineup, it's Harrison Bader, who they happen to put dead last in the order, so that when he comes up, who's trailing right behind him but the top of their order.
And I think that also speaks to the fact that, you know, the bat speed and exit velo isn't exactly top class. So when he does get hits, you know, it's like these – he's good at putting the bat on the ball.
We're talking singles. And when he makes talking singles.
Right. We're talking singles. Exactly. So, you know, I don't hate him in the nine hole for that reason. And that's why he's not hitting after your big bats in the lineup, because you're not looking to drive them home, right? You're looking to get on base. And that's why I don't like the fact he's a double leadoff hitter, because he doesn't get on base enough for that to be true, in my opinion.
Even if he's not, he's been productive so far for the Mets.
Even if he's not, he's hitting well, and it's not for the Yankees.
He's hitting well, and he hit two bombs in the Subway Series.
Can't argue with you there.
Six home runs on the season, two of them coming against the Yankees. That's a third of his home runs this season.
One of the things that, though, like, this does feed into a bigger point that has impressed me the most, because we just talked about how it feels like the offense is starting to really click on all cylinders, is you are finally seeing this is the most deep the Mets lineup has ever looked, where you're not hoping it's certain hitters coming to the plate. It was earlier in the season where it was almost like when you saw Do up in between innings, you were wondering whether or not that was even an inning that was going to be worth watching, because it was depending on who was hot at the time. Last night, the Mets put up 12 runs on the Yankees, and I think it was, I forget, I counted it up when you and I were in the postgame presser, I counted it up on my score sheet. I think it was either 8, 9, or 10 of those RBIs last night were off the bats of hitters in spots 5 through 9. So majority of the actual run production from that absolute blowout of a game last night was from the bottom half of the Mets order. It was everyone contributing and getting on base and causing traffic. And it's a testament to how that team hit last night that I also said to you in the post-game presser that every hitter in the Mets lineup had 5 at-bats last night, except for whoever Torrens pinch hit for. He pinched hit for their 5th at-bat. So every hitter, Alvarez. 1 through 9. Yes. So Alvarez had 4, but technically his spot in the lineup had 5. Every hitters 1 through 9 reached, you know, had an at-bat 5 times last night, which is something you don't see that often in a baseball game.
Yeah, because we were walking everyone.
And hitting them.
And yeah, no, only JD Martinez was not in the top 5 who got a RBI. So good point there, Derek.
Yeah, and these Mets now are 39-39, 1.5 games out of a wild card spot. You would think they'd have taken over one by now, but the Padres just played the World Series. Their World Series, or what felt like a World Series, against the Nationals. Man, I don't know if you guys caught any of that series.
That series was nuts, unreal, bro. Series. Why does everyone hate Jerickson Profar? I don't get it.
He's just good.
Mr. Irrelevant.
Mr. Irrelevant. The Cardinals
are so irrelevant.
Will Smith calling people irrelevant.
He's so, yeah. Second best catcher in baseball calling people irrelevant. Absolutely.
Right, because the first one's Francisco Alvarez. I'm kidding.
The Cardinals also have been winning games against the Braves this past week. So it's still 1.5 games the Mets are back. But I think they're going into a really interesting stretch right now. And the last thing I want to touch on regarding this team is They do have to navigate muddy waters a little bit in regards to their bullpen in this coming stretch, because you think about Edwin Diaz being suspended for 8 more games now. It was announced during the game yesterday that Drew Smith is going on the IL. Sean Reed Foley also just went on the IL. So those are three guys who have really been pitching in not late innings for the Mets. You know, Sean Reed Foley recently has been a seventh, eighth inning guy. Same thing with Drew Smith. And then with Edwin Diaz suspended, you really kind of have to patch it together. So someone like Adrian Hauser going 3 innings last night in a blowout is big, just to sort of save these arms, because you're already down an arm in that bullpen with Diaz's suspension. But it could get a little dicey when it seems like they're going to have to lean heavily on Reed Garrett, Adam Ottavino, who's been shaky at best this season, Jake Diekman, who's also had some pretty terrible moments. But the Mets are going to have to try to survive, you know, this next 10, 12 days with this weakened bullpen.
Yeah, and
Dude,
I
why are
think
the Guardians the best team in baseball?
I know, dude. Oh my God.
It's sneaky too.
It's really sneaky. I don't feel like enough people are talking
Well, their division blows. Let's be clear about this. The
Yeah, no, it's
Royals
true.
were a fraudulent flash in the pan early in the year. That needs to same thing with is Seth Lugo like still the best pitcher in baseball? Because
I
that
think
was
he
wild.
is. I think he is.
Okay, that's absurd. Y'all see Hunter Green puke on the mound like a day
Yeah.
or
That
two ago?
was so funny, dude. Like, I hope he's
If you haven't
okay,
seen
but
that
like,
video,
that
look that
was
up.
so funny.
And then Brian Reynolds proceeded to hit a bomb off him right after he
Yeah,
threw up, which
that's
is just that's
terrible.
just mean.
Yeah. Other storylines, the Astros are probably back. They're back
Yeah.
at 500.
We'll find out this weekend when they come to Citi Field.
I brought that up in the press box to Jack and Lou yesterday. I was like, do you guys realize the Astros have won 7 in a row and are back to 500? Because I feel like it happened super quietly.
The AL West always does this. Like the AL West, there's always some weirdness in the beginning of the season, and then it just turns into an absolute bloodbath come July through the rest of the season. I honestly expect the same sort of. I still think, obviously the Mariners for a while had kind of a stronghold on the division, and now that you're seeing the Astros playing better, I think you're going to see that gap start to close if it's not already. But then I also have no reason to doubt that come late July, early August, that it's going to be a race that includes the Texas Rangers again. I
They
really,
blow though.
I know,
They
but this, I know,
suck.
but the AL West does this, bro. It's always weird between them. That is just a weird division in baseball. It happened last
Yeah.
season too. I
That
know they were
league
playing,
got to.
I know the teams were better across the board. They were better earlier last season. We didn't have this weird like, oh, these teams oddly suck and had to crawl their way back into it. So that is a little bit different this season in that regard. But I have no reason to believe, or not to believe, that division might be one of the more fun races to watch once the season starts to reach, nearing its end.
Yeah, that lead got to 4.5 games pretty quick.
Yeah.
Like the Astros
Yeah.
are now only 4.5 games behind the Seattle Mariners, and that could continue to flip even more. But it's going to be exciting to watch two of the hottest teams in baseball in the Mets and the Astros go head to head this weekend at Citi Field. The National League wildcard race has started to space out a little bit with, you know, kind of fraudulent teams like the Cubs and Reds and Nationals
What
starting.
happened to the Cubs, man? They're last place in their division.
It's a good question. And when the Mets completely shelled Shota Imanaga last Friday, I was like, I didn't really know what was happening. But this Cubs team really struggling. And
Shota's a fraud, bro.
I don't know if he's a fraud, but the Mets figured him out. I mean, that was the first time Imanaga had faced the lineup for the second time in a season. So
Yeah.
completely shut down the Mets at Citi Field, but he'd learned something. The Mets lineup learned something in that start to bounce back against him on Friday. But a lot of storylines in baseball are kind of inching towards this All-Star break, but and this trade deadline, which I think both the Mets and Yankees are poised to be in really, really interesting positions, because you know, 2, 3 weeks ago you would have said the Mets have to sell. They have to trade Pete Alonso. They have to trade Severino and Minaya and all these guys on 1 year deals and Bader and Martinez. But now, if they did that, I think Queens would revolt. And I would revolt too, considering I'm sucked back in to the Mets right now. And that might be foolish of me, but it happens every year. I'm ready to get my heart broken. I don't know about you, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I was just saying to Lou last night that like the difference in what the feeling has been like going to Citi Field over the last few weeks has been truly a really fun thing, and I
I feel
hope
like
it's
people
something.
are smiling more.
I know people are
Like
smiling a
that
lot
security
more.
guard late last night was so nice to us.
Oh my
It was
God,
like
we
one, it was like 12 a.m. It was like midnight.
we were approaching 1 in the morning, and he was in a great mood. No, I mean, look, there's still a lot more season to go. There's a lot more for this team to prove. And again, they're only at 500 right now. They've been playing
Yes.
like a team that they've been playing like an above 500 team this month of June, and they're still only at 500 right now. So there's obviously a lot more to be proven. There's, several other teams that are also in a similar position to them. The National League is weird this year. A lot of really remarkably average overall records that are clogging up the wild card race. So, there's a lot left to be seen, but I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't having an absolute blast these last few weeks, seeing the vibes absolutely flip on their head in Queens. I'm seeing a lot less navy green out in those seats and seeing a lot more people sitting in them. So that's a
Good for
real.
you guys. Good for you guys.
Thanks, Nick. You had the first 2 months of the season to have fun. Now it's our turn for this couple week stretch. Who knows when it'll
It's
flip?
all right. The Dodgers are winning a lot. Ohtani set a record. It's all good.
Every time you say you're a Yankees and Dodgers fans, it makes me like mad.
I have good reason, though. It's not like I'm one of these.
I know you
No,
have
no, no.
good
It's
reason.
literally a. All right, let's play rock, paper, scissors. Heads, I win. Tails, you lose.
Pretty
Yeah.
much it.
That's Nick Palmer's baseball fandom.
I love Ben Rice.
Yeah. Now I
Ben
love
Rice
Ben
is
Rice
cool.
too. But
I like Ben Rice.
I think that'll just about do it for this week's episode of Nosebleeds. This was a Subway Series special. Vibes a little bit different between the Mets and Yankees right now, but that could change at any moment. Jack Warner, Nick Palmer, always a pleasure to talk some baseball with you guys. And we will see you next week on Nosebleeds.
Thank you.